have not followed any one state in what they're doing because the background of Oregon law, of course, is different than the other states have. And so, but the essence and the substance of these other statutes, I think, is contained in our draft. And probably two of the, well, probably the one area, I should say, that gave us the most difficulty, and I'm sure that you're going to find this difficult to formulate a solution for, is the question of the Fifth Amendment problem. And with that, it's just an introductory comment. We can have Roger start on the sections. And I should mention that Mr. Schlosser, who represented CrossMatch, did contact this office at his request and discussed the matter in some detail with Roger when he was doing this third draft.
Well, as you know, we don't have any commentary to the individual sections. The little commentary we have is the first 5 pages. Section 1 is definitions. Sections 2 to 10 are the basic gun control provisions. And what they in effect do is require all firearm owners, that include both handguns and long guns, in the state of Oregon to apply for and be issued a firearm permit, which would be valid permanently unless they became the subject of one of the disabilities found in these sections. Secondly, it would require all firearm owners who had a permit to register any handguns they had with the state police, and they would be issued a certificate showing that that handgun was registered. After the issuance of that handgun certificate, if the handgun is transferred, that is sold or given to another person, it has to be re-registered. Theoretically, the handguns, once all handguns in the state of Oregon are registered, they will thereafter always be registered in the name of the lawful possessor. Section 1 on page 6 has 25 definitions used in the article. Many of these definitions do not apply to the gun control provisions, and many of them apply to the, some of the substantive criminal provisions. And I don't know if you want to go through Section 1 now or refer back to it.
I think just well start there, aren't you?
I would suggest, Mr. Chairman, that I think we should make progress as well by starting in Section 2 and then coming back to Section 1.
All right. No objection.
I might just mention that one of the interesting aspects of the definition section was that we described an antique firearm as one manufactured prior to 1898, and we were a little bit hard put to for a reason as to why that was 1898 instead of, say, 1897 or 1899, but I want you to know we gave it weighty consideration.
And what was the reason against the 1898?
Well, it was a good round number.
We adopted the federal law.
There must be some reason for that.
Probably some, that was the Spanish-American War.
Well, there might have been some change by one of the big rifle companies in a system of guns or something of that kind.
More likely to run the
system. Mr. Chairman, I have a question.
Sorry.
Pray to inquire. Number 6, just maybe, we're not going to go through this sub by sub, are we? I didn't thought it was okay up to 6.
Well, I think it's pretty early.
You mean that
would start on section 2 on page 10, subsection 6. Hey, I want to inquire of Judge Burns or Roger or Don. If I understand it, if you're a deputy DA or an investigator for the Attorney General, you don't need to get a permit or pass a licensing test in order to have a handgun.
Yes, the language, starting with, or otherwise engaged law enforcement, they do such as, was put in there as recommendation to the Attorney General.
While engaged in their official duties.
Well, the one thing that concerned me was public servants entrusted with maintaining the law and security of detention facilities, that's no problem, or otherwise engaged in law enforcement related duties. Does that mean that a campus cop, for example, at Portland State, or a Pinkerton detective that's maintained with, or charged with maintaining security at the B.P. John Furniture Company? What does it mean exactly?
Well, a Pinkerton man at the B.P. John Furniture Company would not come under this exception, as I read it. The campus cop of Portland State would. As I understand it. Is that correct?
Okay.
Because of our definition.
Public servant.
Public servant.
Look at the, there's discussion on page 5 and then it speaks to this. We spent quite a little while on this particular area because it is a troublesome.
Read in it the six sections. Five will apply to people and one applies to the arms themselves.
Sub 5?
Yeah. Not the holders of, the carriers of, the owners of, or whatever, but the weapons themselves, where the other five all apply to the possessors. Or
you know, before we go too far in this, Mr. Sanderson is here from the Attorney General's office, and he has suggested to Don certain amendments that should be made to this draft if we're going to adopt it. And Don has told me that some of the suggestions are good ones. Now, they cover a multitude of sections, and rather than have him speak with reference to section 2 and then later to 13, I was wondering, first, does the commission wish to hear Mr. Sanderson? He's talked to me this morning about some proposed amendments which seem to make sense to me, actually.
I wonder, and I have no objection to hearing him, but I also wonder if he's got a list of sections we're going to be getting into them, not him either. He's going to have to sit here all day
That's
and pop up every 5 minutes. I wonder, I suppose he's got some notes that will give us some guidance, and I wonder if he could Xerox them and give us each a copy of them so we have a chance to refer.
Well, the type of notes that he has, they could be Xerox, but I don't think they would be too meaningful.
Right.
It would save him having to pop up, as you say, all the time, and I think that Don and Roger and some of the members could keep in mind his suggestions as we move along. If there's no objection, then, Mr. Sanderson, do you wish to take that chair up there and outline? And I think you indicated to me that you would require no more than 10 minutes.
I think I can do it in about 10 minutes. I just represent myself. Notary going through here that I think will alleviate some of the problems that there are.
Right ahead.
I think I should make it clear that I don't represent Lee Johnson. I'm just one of the fellows of the officers in this problem and has gone over. In fact, I'm probably responsible for the subsection 6 language. I suggested that in an earlier memorandum to Don. That's how it got in the code. Section 3B, I think the commission considers there. In light of the broad definition of the word transfer with regard to handgun and firearm, meaning to including the word loan, is it intended by the commission that a man going pistol shooting or target shooting with a rifle with his wife, if he lets her shoot the gun, does that put her in illegal possession of the firearm and thereby committing a crime? And does that make him illegally transfer a firearm and thereby commit a crime? You have built into the code a provision that a person can take an unemancipated child target shooting and not violate the law. wish to add or other relative to that section of the statute. Well, but in any case, I'm wondering if you want to make that illegal. I think it is under the current statute. Section 5, you've left out the definition of the term of the permit.
It was
in the original draft. Somehow, I think it inadvertently got left out in the redraft. In other words, is it renewable yearly? Is it permanent? Is it good until revoked? When is it good?
That's purely a drafting error. That's a drafting error. That should be.
Right, I think
it was meant to be.
I think you should specify, or it's going to be unclear, how long this permit is good for. And so I would say in section 5.3, you should add something about the term. All right, section 8.3 and 4. Section 8.3 and 8.4 and section 21B. These are your provisions regarding disposal of firearms if a person's permit is revoked. And it provides for disposition within a 10-day period. I think you need some kind of further drafting to account for the situation where a buyer cannot be found within a 10-day period. In short, if a person with, say, a $2,000 to $10,000 gun collection has his permit revoked and it says dispose of the guns within 10 days, does he have to sell them for 2 cents on the dollar, or can he force the government to buy them in an inverse condemnation? I think you've got a problem there. There's a real open-ended problem on who's going to pick up the bill for them.
Would it be alleviated if we extended the 10-day period to, say, 30 days or 60
10
days?
Years?
Well, I think maybe what you should do is redraft it to say dispose of within a reasonable time and leave that perhaps for court supervision to determine what is going to be a fair market value for this kind of thing.
How are you going to limit it to that particular one? Judge Burns has a .22 pistol over here and fails to qualify it for renewal, and so he has to sell it. And it's a Ivor Johnson 9-shot, pretty common item, and he can get rid of it by going to his neighbor and saying, "Here, give me $22 for this gun, and you can have it." Whereas Mr. Clark has got this collection, and he's going to make the court supervise Judge Burns in 10 days if he doesn't show up. One of the problems the courts have is that they're doing too damn many things to sign cases, and it seems like they're bad enough.
Yeah, Don wants to put in one for last.
Again, I'm mentioning, Ford, is that you do have a problem there, and I think you're going
well,
to...
I'd like to have your suggested solution, along with the... I'm not trying to nitpick yet, I just would like to have your suggested solution along with your delineation of the problem.
We can nitpick later.
Maybe you're going to have to set it up as a forced public auction sale or something like this, but I don't know. All I'm saying is if you put a 10-day limit on it, the statute says nothing about what happens if it isn't sold within the 10 days or if a buyer cannot be located.
Yeah, I can agree that this could create a problem. I'm trying to find a solution.
We asked for Attorney General's opinion on that after this is passed.
Oh, well, that's all right.
Go right ahead.
Section 13.3. This is the concealed weapons provision. I think, first of all, in section 13.1, you are advocating putting the determination of proof that the applicant is of good moral character and that good cause exists in the state police, and the word used in the statute is may, which I think generally is interpreted to mean a discretionary standard. I would suggest that you add a sentence to subsection 1 of section 13 to the effect that if the department refuses to issue a license, that decision shall be reviewable by the circuit court in a closed hearing unless the applicant demands a public hearing. I think there should be some kind of review of the state police discretion in that.
Jim, tell us the reason for the closed hearing. I see a lot of just perplexity.
We have a study that was
APA could go into 183, couldn't it?
Well, all right. The problem I'm thinking of particularly is take the example of a stock broker who regularly carries maybe $10,000 to $20,000 in negotiable bond securities or large amounts of cash on him regularly. He isn't going to want to go into a public hearing to try to obtain his gun permit. If to do so, he's forced to choose the competing alternative of announcing to the world that he often walks around with large sums of cash on him.
Of course, Mr. Chairman, we don't have that in the present code providing for issuance of licenses of this sort. And I would certainly agree with the newspaper publisher that the courts have far too much to do now. I see no reason to have a review provision in this area where we don't have one now.
I wish you were referring to as Mr. Chandler, said the newspaper publisher.
I'm not a newspaper publisher.
He's a yellow journalist.
In any event,
I wore my white shirt this morning.
In any event, Mr. Sanderson, that's a suggestion that you were making.
It's just a suggestion.
Fine.
He doesn't wish to adopt it, certainly.
You go right ahead.
Subsection 3, I would suggest, and this is a suggestion I think aimed more than anything at eliminating paperwork with no reduced or no reduced benefit. I would suggest eliminating the words including the information set forth in subsection 1 of section 9 of this article. Basically, that information is required to be printed on the license in subsection 2 anyway, and if the license does include the permit number and the registration card number, all that information has already been assembled once before, and if the numbers of those two documents is on the license, it would be a simple matter to retrieve it at any given time that the need arises. Otherwise, you're likely to end up with a license that's a four-page document which does no more than reprint information that you already have and requires an extra carbon copy in addition to what you already provided for. I think it just eliminates some Section 25.3 regarding the defenses to Section 18 carrying a concealed weapon in the first degree. In a prosecution under Section 18, which is the one that says you can't carry concealed handguns, it is a defense that at the time of the alleged offense, the actor was a person defined in subsection 1, 2, 3, 4, or 6 of Section 2 of this article. Well, Section 2 provides for carrying concealed weapons while on duty. I submit that you're going to probably have problems and that many police organizations have regulations that provide officers shall carry weapons on or off duty, and I don't see any benefit in requiring officers to obtain a concealed weapons permit in order to carry their gun off duty. Other than that, I would eliminate that. I think that'll save quite a bit of paperwork and issue concealed weapons permits to police officers, and I think that that can be eliminated by simply adding the language while on or off duty to sub A 3 of 25 with regard to categories 2, 3, and 6. And that just while on or off duty language will eliminate that problem with regard to concealed weapons. Other than that, no.
Any questions, Mr. Sanderson? Mr. Johnson?
What the hell are you doing there, Sam?
Thank you very much.
That was the best question you could have asked. That took care of all of
the... I think that to get all of the preliminaries out of the way, Captain Howard of the State Police is here, and Don part, it had to be a note saying he could speak to us with respect to the cost of the administration of this program. And I think it might be enlightening to the commission to have this information. Captain Howard, do you wish to come forward and inform the committee of your findings?
The note from Don Collette. The note from Don.
Oh,
does Mr. Johnson want to be recorded on the on the vote on long gun licensing
don't do it.
And registration?
Don't do it. Terry, you don't have to worry about it. Don't have to stick your neck out. Just let us.
Mr. Chairman, when House Bill 1546 was introduced before the legislative Senate, we made a survey and estimated that so far as the content of that particular bill was concerned, that the approximate cost would be $372,809 for the 6971 by annual.
How much?
$372,809. This included additional costs above normal for the first 6 months of the transition period. We communicated with various states to determine their experience as far as in New York, we found there was a total of $741,000 as of December 31, 1967, with 75,697 permits being processed during the year 1967. Total firearm registration was proposed in New York in 1967 with failed legislative approval. However, the interesting thing to us was that under the proposed bill, the cost of implementation was estimated at $51 million, with an income of $9 million as the revenue estimated from the permit fee. We went into detail with New York, with New Jersey, with Michigan, with Illinois. The state of Illinois, they enacted an identification card system in connection to firearms registration, and they budgeted $1,103,000 to implement the legislation. New York State budgeted $570,780 for the 6869 Firearms Control Act, but estimates of cost of investigation alone in connection with the enforcement of the act are between $900,000 to $1,500,000. It's also estimated that in New York City alone there are 300,000 to 500,000 individuals who own firearms. We also found that so far as processing each permit, in some areas we could obtain a figure with respect to narcotic addicts being barred from having permits. The cost to determine if such applicants were narcotic addicts and so forth, if they were in the prohibited class, would be 50 cents per inquiry. New York City Pistol Control Program reported it cost $72.87 per act because of the restrictiveness of the prohibition included in the act. Illinois, on the other hand, they figured $5 per application fee would be required. This would be the cost of their operation. As far as House Bill 1546 was concerned, it was estimated that we'd be required to employ an attorney. We'd be required to employ 15 fingerprint technicians for a period of 6 months during the transition period. And supplemental to that, we'd be able to operate with two additional technicians. We also figured six field investigators stationed at strategic areas in the state for the purpose of making field investigations.
All questions, comments.
Captain, before you continue, did Dernstead Young invite you over today? We'll get one of them at Hood River and one in Baker.
Yeah, I can see it. Then you want to play Great Baker down.
Huh?
He wasn't fine.
I know, and I'm just kidding.
Go right ahead and do it,
Just to give you some idea, in Michigan, as of October 1, 1968, there was 1,134,869 pistol registrations on file with the state police. Now, in this state, any firearm 30 inches or less in length is classified as a pistol or a revolver. This state processes 7,000 permits per month. They advise that it required an annual expenditure of $40,000, with planned computerization of permit records anticipated to increase the cost substantially.
Excuse me a minute. Captain, I'm not, but it seems that the things of this sort, the Michigan thing, doesn't really have much bearing. In the first place, their definition of a concealable weapon is anything 30 inches or less in length, which is considerably different than our definition. And Michigan's one of the two or three or four biggest states in the United States, and we're one of the smallest. I have a hard time getting these numbers into something. What do they mean here?
Well, we had to first come up with an estimate, the cost of an estimate for the legislature, and the only place we could go were to those states who had enacted somewhat similar laws, comparable to that which was introduced before our legislative assembly. And we, they say, went to Michigan, went to New York, Illinois, New Jersey. These are states that had enacted laws. We had to obtain from them a cost estimate so that we could base cost estimate on legislation. This is the
region. Well, New York has 20 million people, and Oregon has.
But you converted that into Oregon terms for the purpose
yes,
of that legislation.
Yes, with our cost estimate, we converted it into Oregon terms. We converted it into a basis of perhaps 500,000 weapons being involved, which probably is conservative. It could be 30% more than 500.
Are those long or short guns?
Well, this would be, this House bill was for both long and short guns.
It required fingerprinting, however, for all persons.
It is 15 fingerprints.
This one doesn't.
Well, here's just one little short comment I'd like to make about New Jersey. As of November 1968, there were a total of 290,419 firearms registered with the state police, consisting of 18,275 rifles, 9,225 shotguns, and 262,919 handguns. Eight state police and nine civilian clerical personnel are assigned to what they call the Firearms Permit Section. Six of the police personnel investigate firearms retail, wholesale, and manufacturer's applications and related investigations. The police department informs that they estimate the cost of 35 cents per applicant processing for wages only, and four clerk typists process 50 applications each workday. That might give you some idea.
That's what, 1.5 applications per clerk per hour. That's pretty, I'll take the contract on that basis.
You're not under civil service.
I'll even give up that liberty.
According to a consultant for the National Commission on Causes and Prevention of Violence, administering a restrictive firearms licensing registration program can cost as much as $72 per application. New York City. They deny possession of firearms to individuals who have received a dishonorable discharge from the armed services. A thorough check of military discharges costs approximately $3.25 per inquiry and produces few results. Only four out of 484,760 individuals separated from the U.S. Army in fiscal 1968 were discharged under dishonorable conditions. Only four. All these inquiries.
By the way, we don't have that.
Any questions, Captain Howard? Dave?
Captain Howard, if you recall, their estimate was that 49% of the households in Oregon have firearms.
I think that's be pretty conservative. I was supposed to come up with an estimate. I found it extremely difficult. And I had to be rather arbitrary about it. I came up with the fact that there was 500,000 hunting license. 500 miles, and I have to see them probably
57 miles. My experience is that someone who has a gun, a household with a gun, generally has more than one.
I have about five.
We're talking about registration groups. That's a gentle
answer. Yes, sir. It'd be real hard to difficult. I mean, it'd be real difficult to make an accurate estimate because of the inspection. It's not too easy.
Well, then that estimate, you got any idea how many handguns?
No.
Mr. Chairman, it would be interesting to poll this group.
On what?
How many guns are owned right here?
Oh, yes.
I got eight.
I have seven or eight.
How many handguns?
Two.
None.
I'm not a member, but I don't have any handguns.
Four long guns and one.
Six long guns.
I have five and one.
You have five.
Well, I have two handguns, neither of them in my possession, both in possession of police officers.
Story is go out and buy some Winchester stock.
I don't have a Winchester.
Well, it would seem like 500,000 down there on the minimum estimate. Probably talking about maybe a million.
I would guess that the total that we've got, three quarters of a ton for every resident in the state.
That's about it.
That'd be a million and a half tons. The only thing I don't understand about these people, we talk about the $372,000, this is the estimated cost of operating things, but what's the estimated income under this provisions?
Well, it would be less under this draft than under the $372,000 he estimated, because that was for long and short guns both under that House bill.
Yeah, and there was never a figure firmed up as to what the permitted cost.
There is in this draft, of course, and that's why.
AG?
Kevin Howard, I know you. I've seen. As I recall, there's very few crimes.
We can't hear you.
Very few crimes.
We decided that issue at 9:45.
No,
It'd be hard to answer that. It is not common to commit robberies with 22 life. It is not common to commit homicides. Normally, I think the handgun is the most usual weapon, but on many occasions, 22 life.
Johnson, I'd like to read to you since you missed the earlier part of the meeting.
I just wanted to get some information.
Three items that I found in this morning's Salem Statesman, a small newspaper published in a small town.
A small state.
But there are those who love it.
There are those who love it.
I didn't ask you any questions, Mr. Chandler. I asked Captain Howard a question, and that's all the information I'm sharing and received.
It's obvious that your questions come from ignorance.
Are you inferring that Captain Howard is ignorant?
No, from the questions. H2, there was a guy found guilty by a jury to the pointing a firearm at a Catholic church dance. He used a rifle, pointed a rifle at a police officer.
Hmm?
Page 5, there's a story about a guy who killed 3 people and then killed himself with a rifle, first to a rifle. And page 8, there's a story about a guy who killed himself accidentally with a pistol.
The question I asked Captain Howard was, crimes that are committed with concealed weapons, how often are those concealed weapons registered in the present law?
Why don't you ask Don Levin, who can speak to that same subject from the staff report?
Now, it isn't just Oregon, this is nationwide figures, and these are based on crimes committed in the United States in 1967. And they point out that although there are only about 27% of all the firearms in this country are handguns, they're the predominant firearm used in crime. It gives some very interesting statistics. Homicides committed in the United States in 1967, percentage committed with handguns 76%, committed with long guns 24%. Aggravated assault committed with handguns 86%, committed with long guns 14%. And robbery, percentage committed with handguns 96%, and only 4% of the robberies that committed in the United States were armed robberies were committed with long guns.
Bring my question.
Now, I think if anybody thinks, those of us in favor of the proposal of bulletproof, thinks this will solve a problem immediately as of the day that the initial 6-month registration period goes by, I think it continues. I think this is one of those things that's going to take a cumulative effect of several years before you've got the registrations and transfers and so forth and such orders that they're a major assistance.
And ultimately, my only response I would make.
Ultimately, we'll have no crime to
done. Registration is nothing but evidential. I think that's going to keep getting a hold of firearms.
Do they
have banned?
They have registration at the state.
Don Clark.
I might agree with you on banning handguns, but there has been a marked and significant decrease in certain kinds of crimes, in certain areas where they have passed such laws. But I agree with Mr. Chamber, it is an accumulative thing, and it doesn't just go instantly. You don't wave a wand.
Senator Burns, we wish just to ask a question. Captain, you have no authority or jurisdiction now for firearms registration, is that right? Now, when this bill was in front of the House in 1969, and you folks looked into this, you contemplated if this were imposed upon you or given to you by legislative directive, what would you do? Set up a central registry in your office here in Salem, and everything would funnel into Salem, is that right? Did you envision that this would be computerized initially, or what specifics did you
do? We envisioned that ultimately it would be computerized whenever computers are available to process the information. But in the interim, it would have to be a hard file.
It would be a hard file. Now, there are some municipalities, like the city of Portland, which have registration statutes or ordinances. Isn't that right, Helen? Well, they have a registration ordinance, 72 out on sales.
Sale of new handguns.
That's all. But you have no interchange presently with those municipalities?
No, sir. If we have an incident where we're making inquiry to identify a particular gun by serial number, the only way we can do it is communicate with the National Fire Information Center, Washington, D.C., and send out information by telegraph or teletext to the agencies in the state, asking them to check the records and determine whether or not this is of interest to them.
Any further questions, Captain Howard? Thank you very much, Yeah, let's take a recess. Let's recess for extended 10 minutes.
Oh, operates. She said we both agree some continents.
Oh, hell no. We're not going to do food today. Bob, when we reconvene here, you're sure you don't want to go into that?
Not unless some other member shows up, Senator, that hasn't had the benefit of it.
And the voice of opposition.
Oh, yes, you have to voice opposition, too.
Yeah.
If a friendly face shows up.
I move that we incorporate the May 15th issue of the Salem paper.
In the main bulletin?
In the minutes.
Oh.
including the ad.
Where were we?
We're on section two.
Somebody say something.
Well, is there any way, just from a drafting standpoint, is there any way of calling either changing the title from exempted persons or else changing section 5 so that the bearers of or owners or possessors of antique firearms are not called so that antique firearms themselves are not called exempted persons?
Why couldn't we do it this way? Amend so that it would read shall not apply to antique firearms or to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6.
All right.
Could we do that?
Well,
right.
But we don't say to persons. We say that this shall not apply to members, federal officials, police officers. Doesn't apply to firearms.
Just reading the underlined.
What our grammatical expert complains about, though, is
was the exempted persons.
Exempted
there.
Persons, and you could say shall not apply to antique firearms or to these various described individuals.
We could just say, since that's really not part of the statute anyway, that you just say exemptions.
That's fine.
We're saying that they
section 2
and section 1. Because subsection 7 doesn't
1920 or later
particularly apply to the main person.
Okay, I move we
adopt section 2.
Adopt section 2 as amended.
Mr. Chairman, in this section are the firearms covered that I might own, if I might have clubs, the pulled out, or I just have some of that reason?
The definition covers that. The page 6, look on page 6, section 1, subsection 8.
I move we delay consideration of this until the 71 legislature reapportions itself, Mr. Chairman.
Or me. Readily be converted.
This is the language.
So that would.
Your gun in the bolt house is still at one desk.
Any fire weapon, firing pin.
Because it would be readily convertible.
Sure. Pull the fire pin out.
Just pull on the bolt for the firing pin.
You only have to pay $25 to get a repair.
What if I had a plug?
You know, which kind of a plug?
You saddle it up.
Want to weld it? Yeah. You want to just get a shotgun plug a little longer one than usual so you can't break any.
Do you have anything more than the barrel there?
What are you doing that plug?
Can I ask Don a question?
Yes.
Don, in accepting in sub 7 there, firearm ammunition. Any place else apart that ammunition is controlled in this article?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Look at section 3A, for example.
Well, the theory behind that is that no one would have a firearm and ammunition and would not have a firearm. Is that correct? This would also prohibit the ownership or possession of ammunition by someone who did not have a firearm?
That's correct.
Why would they want it anyway? Why would they want it anyway?
Yeah, I imagine there are a lot of things around your house. Someone else would wonder what you want.
Well, it's fun to throw it in the fireplace at a hot gun.
That was a lot of fun. Throw the gun shells in the fireplace.
Well, let's see.
I'm
the rest of the
as a man, no, I'm
well. I think we adopt section two, Mr. Chairman, but it should be clear that there are a number of areas in here that are capable of being some dispute. We have provisions for non-residents, so forth.
I don't like that.
We have provisions for unemancipated minors and so on. And while I'm hopeful we can complete our work quickly on it, I just wanted to point out that This is an area that isn't easy.
Mr. Chairman,
it's always been a policy decision.
I asked staff if the last word in NA, when you say enclosed in a case, I suppose case means scabbard, is that right?
Gun case.
Gun case or something.
It's just that we couldn't spell scabbard by that time of the day, so we used case.
Someone who comes over from Idaho, Caldwell, Idaho, to Ontario to engage in a trap shoot, if he happens to bring his trap gun that not in a case, he's stuck with it.
Well, of course, Senator, if he's a good enough trap shooter to cross the state line for that purpose, he's got a case.
Well, but if he doesn't, under this, he's in violation.
Well, why don't you get the, maybe we could get the franchise drink that is all scabbard from the state line.
Call it State Line Scabbard Inc.
Mr. Chairman, with what you've raised on quite obviously on the snake with the chunk of hunters, for instance, the license in both Oregon and Idaho, again, and both on the Oregon side, across the river and on chuckers. Idaho, transported it to Finnegan back, and no case of Finnegan. The Idaho River.
Well, while they're in a hunting area, they need not be so enclosed.
We're hunting is permitted. 10A.
But if he's going to get his car in Portland and drive to Baker, he better have the case while he's in Vancouver, Washington, and drive to Baker. Why, then he better have the case to go to Baker.
To the hunting area.
Was the entire state open for pheasants? For instance, the same time carrying something around about
sure, if it's a pheasant season, he's out looking for pheasants.
But a guy wandering around with a rifle in the city of Portland during, even though it happened during deer hunting season, he better not have that rifle out and waving it around. He better have a case.
Well, now this is a non-resident.
Yeah, that's a non-resident, yeah. If he's coming down here to hunt.
You ready for the question? As amended?
As amended.
Call the roll.
Jennifer. Aye. Edinburgh.
Aye.
Chandler.
Aye.
Carr.
Aye.
Frost.
No.
Drinstead.
No.
Knight.
Aye.
Young.
No.
Mr. Chairman.
No.
Carrie.
Section 3.
Section 3 is a general statement as effective in the gun control provisions. No person shall, after the effective date of this article, acquire or transfer a firearm or firearm ammunition within this state unless he holds a valid firearm permit. Can acquire or transfer a handgun within the state unless both the purchaser and the seller comply with the registration requirements of Section 9. Involves the registration of handguns and the transfer of the certificates when they are transferred from one person to another. Subsection 2, persons owning firearms or firearm ammunition within Oregon on the effective date of this article have 180 days to sell or otherwise transfer the firearm or ammunition or apply for a firearm permit in their own name. If they and any handguns at the same time they apply for the firearm permit, they're required to apply for a registration certificate before for each, and get a home.
So we approach section three also, right, two individuals that get a one trade.
Handguns? Well, it would, because of course the whole basis of handgun registration is to keep track of them so you know exactly where they are.
Do you mind, Mr. Cross, if I read this?
I move to approve section three.
Second?
Now, this is one of the sections that
I think that's an interesting point, but I can only imagine two district attorneys in the state who would ever bring action under those things. I can't imagine a jury in the state convicting anybody under those circumstances. Well, we have the jury part, and it's pretty well established in our judicial process, and it's used quite widely.
Well, Bob, you use that argument on the other side in the past here.
Well, Senator, your argument's available to me.
Even those found in the Salem Statesman.
Whatever is available. Consistency is the hobgoblin of little mind.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, has this ever been considered? Can a license be an automatic firearm permit? A hunting license?
I mean, as an abstract question, you're under this draft.
An abstract question. Why should you have a permit? Other people that have antique guns or something, or want to just keep them and not use them,
just
probably have to have. But if I go down and get my hunting license, wouldn't that be an automatic permit? The purpose, though, is that.
Later on, we come to the area where we make certain persons ineligible, felons, mentally ill, narcotics addicts, and so on, and there has to be some mechanism for separating those out.
But you give them a hunting license, but you wouldn't give them a gun permit.
Right.
How
would you feel about
that?
But this is a lifetime permit unless you
later fall into one of the
categories. Unless you become insane or be convicted of a crime or something like this. So this is this gun permit that you get, this firearm permit, it's a lifetime deal, whereas a hunting license, it's a yearly fee to pay for the deer.
And at such time as you become insane, under a penalty of law, you're required to report that fact.
Mr. Chairman, I want to make it clear that from time to time, one of the members of our subcommittee will point out such helpful observations.
All right, call the roll.
Judge
Gregory.
Aye.
Sandra Berg.
Aye.
Jerry Lee.
Aye.
Chandler.
Aye.
Farr.
Aye.
Croft.
No.
Durnstead.
No.
Knight.
Aye.
Young.
No.
Mr. Chairman.
No. I want to point out to the proponents of this section that they better damn well stick together. These things are going 5-4 all the way along.
And I don't want anybody to get
nobody gets any phone calls. Bar the door. Don't let them out.
Section 4,
application for a firearm permit. Required contents, the authority is vet has the state police. Applicant attests to the fact that he's not ineligible to receive the firearm permit. Signs it, which in effect would make him a misstatement on the application. He would be guilty under our unsworn falsification section.
So also, it's cause for revocation.
Yes.
Later on.
Mr. Chairman, I move approval of section 4.
Mr. Chairman, I don't recall.
You're going to vote against it anyway.
I don't recall what the subcommittee did with respect to leaving the fee part blank. Did we do anything at all?
No, we didn't recommend the fee.
Who's going to put it in? Someone who will make it $50?
No, it was not our purpose to make this thing.
What was that
for? Pay for the expense.
Oh, you talked about $5, didn't you?
Well, I was looking through the minutes here.
There was $3 for something.
Yeah.
I don't recall.
Our first draft in this area, we were talking about fees for concealed weapons.
Yeah,
recommended $3. I don't recall we've ever recommended fees.
No. Since it is a lifetime permit, it only requires one investigation, I think it would could perhaps be higher than most other states.
We really felt that we weren't.
Well, let's put
confident to put a figure in there, frankly, because there's so many variables in the cost of administration.
To me, as long as we have made a policy decision here to present this separately, we can very properly simply leave it blank.
We made the policy. Through with the bill. I don't think they need it.
We made the policy decision some time ago that the fee should be set at an amount not greater than necessary to bear the cost of administering the program, cover the cost of administering the program.
$372,000?
Not per weapon, of course.
$72,000.
Big item on that other cost.
And we really don't have any idea what fee will support that thing at present. I didn't hear anything this morning that gave me any indication of what the fee should be. I think we ought to leave the thing blank. Until such time as state police and legislature have a chance to determine what it would cost.
When it goes to Ways and Means, Hansel and Newbury will take care of it. Question?
All right, call the roll.
Judge Burns?
Aye.
Senator Burns?
Aye.
Chandler?
Aye.
Clark?
Aye.
Frost?
No.
John? Jernstedt?
No.
Johnson?
Vote aye.
Section 4.
Page 13. Vote aye.
Put the application over.
You want time to read it?
There we lost.
Nine.
Aye.
Yeah.
No.
What do you?
No.
Five.
Defeated. Next section.
Let's go back and try the first.
Well, hell, without that, the first three sections don't mean anything.
That's right.
Somebody sent for Carson.
Hey, Chan, or Spalding gave me a proxy.
No, I mean, I'm really serious about it. We went through all this rat race here a couple hours ago, and now we got and this is not personal, but we got the in-and-outers that are going to change this thing from section to section, and we've approved three sections. Now we come down to the section that means something. We failed to approve that. Now, if Mr. Carson gets off the National Guards and comes back here at 20 minutes past 12, why, then we'll approve a couple, and we're going to be in a ridiculous situation.
Well, I'm leaving at noon after
that. I think.
Oh, well, actually, now.
We voted this morning to have this 6 to 4. Maybe if some of the.
I'll change my vote
the
aye.
The voters could look at it in this way, that if we're going to have it, this is the way I would prefer to have it.
I might reconsider and at least accept that those who are voting against are just as sincere and serious
well,
as they are.
I'm not talking about sincerity. Please, Tony, don't get me wrong. I'm not talking about sincerity. But we did fight it out on sincerity grounds some time back and decided to go through with the thing. Now, I don't see how we can go through and willy-nilly pull a section out here and there just because...
As chairman...
And on the side, Mr. Johnson has taken care of the problem.
I'll change my vote to aye. In all likelihood, I vote the entire article. Basically, Chandler Gardner relied.
All right, he changed his vote to aye. It's carried. Section 5.
Go answer promptly.
Now this states when the permits are issuable and their term. Now the paragraph on the term was deleted. This paragraph should be in there.
Why don't you read that?
Firearm permit shall be valid permanently unless revoked or suspended or until such time as the holder becomes subject to one of the disabilities set forth in section 6 of this article, whereupon the firearm permit shall be void and shall be returned by the holder to the park within 10 days after it's been employed.
That will be approved section 5.
that's subsection 5, 6, 5.
Well, it should probably be in subsection 4, and subsection 4 should be subsection 5.
Could we not have that language again, please?
Well, it was technically drafted better. It should say, on 4, it should be shall be properly registered as a provision. Sorry.
Where's the
after word register on bottom
shall be properly, should say, shall be registered as a part of the provision. Sorry.
Chairman, are there any estimates on the cost of section 1?
I don't know about the 11th day and the 16th day.
On the investigation?
Yeah.
We got those from other states.
Well, are those really
that was for the old bill.
We recognize the old bill. They're probably not particularly the beginning to do that.
I think it was less investigation involved in this.
The difficulty is there's no way to determine how many applications you're going to receive. I'd estimate in Oregon, based upon firearm owners, it'd be at least a half a million. But the cost of processing a half a million applications.
I doubt if it would be that much. I suspect that most registrations would be in the name of one person in the family. There are something less than a million families in the state. Roughly 2 million people, half of them are under the age of 25.
Well, the statistics show that 49% of the households in Oregon, for example, own at least one firearm. Now, if you knew exactly how many households there were in Oregon, you'd have some idea of how many applicants you're going to have. Even if you only had one,
there's about 600,000 occupied dwelling units in the state.
Well, that would be 300,000 households, and
it'd be 600,000. Be about 49% of that would be about 300,000.
Right.
Well, we spent quite a bit of time in subcommittee concerned with the problem of the initial registration rush. Frankly, we didn't come up with any answers. We hope that through widespread publicity and repeated announcements and so on, that the state police and others would make the public generally aware that they have to get squared away within 180 days after the effective day of the act. But we recognize that there's still going to be a lot of them are going to come in at the last minute, no matter how much announcement we get. And I don't think there's any answer. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of them. They're going to wait till 179th or 180th day, and then they're going to be on the doorstep of the state police, and they're going to be swamped for some period of time. To be frank with you, on the subcommittee, we didn't have any answer to that, basically. And I don't know that an answer is capable. But it's inherent in any system in which you start a new setup. Different than automobiles, different than hunting licenses and so on, where you've got an ongoing system.
Question is on the amendment.
On the what? On the section as amended.
Well, one of the
two amendments. One, remove the word properly in the last line and follow registered in accordance with the provisions of this article. And the other one to add to section 4, the permanence of the license provision is read by Roger.
Any questions?
Ready? Call the roll.
Jed Burns.
Aye.
Sandra Burns.
Aye.
Chandler.
Aye.
Clark.
Aye.
Frost. Dempstead. Aye. Johnson. Knight.
Aye.
Young.
No. Carried. Section 6. With respect to Section 6, I notice in sub 6 that persons firearm permitted denied is not eligible to reapply for a firearm permit for 3 years from the date of denial. What if he's 17 years old when he applied?
He'd have to wait till he was 20.
And
And otherwise, if you were 18 when you applied, you could get it.
I don't think that's the, you know, the purport.
Maybe I would expect that.
That only applies to subsection 6, using a fictitious name.
He becomes then at 17 and says, I'm 19, and he gets denied, and he does have to wait.
They just have to wait.
Well, again, I'm not trying to delay the thing, but there are troublesome parts of this as well.
This is one of the harder sections.
And we have what might appear to be an inconsistency in the sense that you cannot get a firearm permit if you're less than 18, which would be inconsistent with the general hunting
provision.
And you'll notice that in the following section, you can get a long gun permit if you're 15 or older, provided you have parents' permission. And there isn't any question but this is an inconsistency. Again, I'm not trying to delay consideration, but it's a difficult...
is there any way to resolve it?
If you're 15 years old, you can get, with parental permission, you can get a restricted permit to use the long gun.
And, of course, the other part, namely that while they're out hunting, the parent... Bones, isn't that right, John? Bones is gun to his son, that would be a permissible transfer.
At any age.
Yeah, at any age.
But he only hunt with his guardian or parent.
Right.
He can't go hunting by himself under 15.
This is widely supported by the County Roadside Department. This is county. That's what happens to most of our road signs is when the 12-year-old takes 22 without pop along. And there are that it happens, I suspect, more often.
Can I ask you,
yes, Tom?
On this physical defect determination, initially that's made by the Department of State Police. In other words, they would make that finding. I walk in, have one eye, and say, well, I'm sorry. There are no standards for what is an object. I can say it's an arbitrary determination.
Unconstitutionally made.
Well, now they got the same provision in airplane pilot's licenses, and it's as vague. The FAA wants to turn you down on a license application. They do it.
I think the answer is yes. You have, of course, review provisions, but I think the answer is yes. If the department initially makes that determination, they would deny the issuance of the permit, unless the position certificates were presented.
Is there a white LeSabre Buick belonging to any of the members? Well, your battery's about to go down. Your lights are on. Now let's take a vote.
No.
Wait a minute.
I was going to suggest we adjourn for lunch.
This might be a good point to do that.
Frost is going to leave. We're going to have Clark out of the room for 5 minutes while we're dead again.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
I assign you my vote.
I think that we're going to be able to finish this in a half an hour. I'd rather go through and get the hell out of here.
Well, we have some other business, Mr. Chairman. Some rather important business other than just this article today.
That's right.
Why don't we take a short lunch break instead of this long hour and have a great handsome type?
I'm going to start that thing out a little bit.
Yeah, we won't take any action other than defeating
him. Well, then emasculating him will cause God to vote against the whole thing.
You know, you're talking about the pilots. There are standards, though.
And there are qualified positions to give the examination.
Civil Aeronautics Administration has some tailored standards for determining defects, Bob.
Not right.
in some cases, all the limits, in lots of cases, there are certain types of
heart disease. No, in the regulations themselves.
Well, there are certain types of heart disease.
Suffers from a physical defect.
Get a license there. But there are other types which are equally fatal.
Well, that's true, but in Oregon, you see, most Supreme Court
for half hour
rule that you cannot delegate authority without fixing the standards, saying that they must take into consideration. And there's a possibility
you don't need it.
That this
you don't need these.
Is that the whole thing?
I don't care about eating them. I'll have a drink.
But we all need that.
Right. Well, why don't we recess then until 1:15?
A great compromise.
Would that be, or do you want a one, Bob? Whatever the proponents say.
Let's adjourn to one.
Anything is fair.
I'm the floor manager for the group.
Yeah. 1 o'clock?
1:30.
1:15.
We don't want them to be too optimistic about getting out of here. We do have.
No, that's right. Incidentally, this is not the only thing that we have. There are a number of other very important things that we have to.
Can we put this over to our next meeting?
How about 12:30?
1:15.
Well, I just look at some of the members have a long way to go on wheels.
For lunch?
At the end of the day.
Okay. Isn't that far, Aaron?
Good. Section 6. Wasn't it?
Yeah.
Will we approve Section 6?
12. Any further discussion? Call the roll.
Judge Byrne?
Aye.
Kendra Byrne?
Aye.
O'Connor?
Aye. Clark?
Aye.
Jernstead?
No.
Johnson?
Section 6.
18-year-olds
can't vote.
Aye.
Aye,
did you say?
Yeah.
Aye.
Young?
No.
Mr. Chairman?
No.
I tell you, we do have a vote on the entire article.
Yes, we do. Section 7.
Don't live.
Can't you mobilize one more vote when it comes to
Section 7?
Well, in Section 6, we set out a number of classes of persons who were ineligible to obtain a firearm permit. In Section 7, we're saying that some of those people may be eligible for a restricted firearm permit, which would only allow them to possess a long gun. A through D sets out those classes, carves out those classes of people who would be eligible for a restricted firearm permit.
Why do you say 7 years?
Well, this was taken from the Convicted Criminal Act, the direction of the subcommittee.
And the first chapter of Genesis.
I move approval of Section 7.
Discussion?
Well, I mean, it came from this 7 year Convicted Criminal Act, they said after. For 7 years, and that
would be healthy. My only thought is, I think a guy that was convicted of rustling, put on a ranch, put on probation. I'd like to move to bend that.
Do you think anybody that's been convicted of rustling should later be able to possess a firearm?
I'm not sure if he's working up and down here, county. Yeah.
I had a couple of these rustling until he got them last year.
Right. But 7 years is a long time. But if you've been wrestling up and down here,
County, we've only been long enough that he got very well rehabilitated in Polk County. You see, he's been out.
Those soft judges up there would have put him on.
They go to penitentiary for wrestling from Malheur County. They're rehabilitated when they go back because that was their business before they went in.
I just raise it. There's no support for a motion to reduce that to 3 years. I won't make it.
Ready for the question?
Call for the question on Commissioner Clark's motion.
Okay.
Call the roll.
Judge Burns?
Aye.
Senator Burns?
Aye.
Chandler?
Aye.
Clark?
Aye.
Grinstead?
No.
Johnson?
Grinstead? 4-4.
No. You're okay. Go either way. It doesn't make a difference anymore.
Can I?
Yeah.
No.
Where's all my other votes?
No. Now we don't. You mean 7's defeated?
Yeah.
No.
No.
Five and four.
One, two, three, four. No, it's five to four.
Five to four.
That's why I told him it was okay for him.
You're voting aye, Frank.
He has been all day.
Section eight.
Seems so strange to have you voting with me.
Yeah. I see a lot of weaknesses in any of these, but I don't suppose there's much point in bringing it up.
Well, we approve section eight.
Well,
you've heard the motion.
Well, wait a minute, Mr. Chairman. One of the problems that was mentioned this morning was the 10-day period for transfer of firearms where the permit is revoked.
Seems to me that I'm not sure of ORS 183-480. What's
that's the APA.
What's that?
Administrative Procedures Act.
And it provides what?
Appellate procedures.
Appellate review.
Court review.
Court review.
Of administrative
then agency. The guy who's the collector who's turned down can file for a court review, which will in effect, considering the present state of the court documents in various parts of the state, give him another 6 months to dispose of them, which gets rid of the pressure. He assumes he isn't going to win it.
Well, the thinking of the subcommittee was that it is usual in our society to provide judicial review for a number of administrative activities. Personally, if I were voting my purely personal preferences, the last thing in the world I want to spend my time doing is reviewing the denial or revocation of gun permit. But I think the subcommittee felt that it was wise to build in an appellate review situation. So we simply followed the rather standard procedure of having the appellate review in the usual manner of administrative agency review.
Well, I would agree with that. The problem is that the 10 days.
That probably be under review reference.
Well, the I think the reason for the reference to 183 was to avoid having to write a review section and to get into all your problems.
Well, this language is lifted right out of House Bill 1446.
Well, that's a good reason.
Question.
That bill went along.
Well, that's why we were trying to use it.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would move to amend Section 8 Sub 3 to 8 Sub 3 in response to Jim Sanderson's suggestion. To change it to 30 days in both parts of that section rather than 10 days. I think he has a valid point, and I think that 30 days would be it.
I think any legitimate collector could find.
I would think so.
Find straw man to do in 30 days. You know, someplace, a market, a reasonable market.
That's
about
what it
market.
Is, isn't it? Find a straw man and give him to him.
Maybe.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Carried. You do that in sub 4 too, though.
Question.
M5.
Well, wait a minute.
Now that Paul Arvey has sent it out on the wire and destroyed all of us, so we welcome him back.
Well, I think that the amendment was like 4, but not 5. 5 is simply that he's required to report.
If you flip your lid, you got to tell him that.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. That's to get it in the Gracie language.
Well, what's your pleasure with reference to sub 4?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we similarly amend sub 4 so as to make it 30 days.
You heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no.
No.
Carried.
Move we approve Section 8.
Question. Motion is on the approval of Section 8 as amended. Call the roll.
Fishburne.
Aye.
Senderburn.
Aye.
Chandler.
Aye.
Clark.
Aye.
Jernstead.
No.
Johnson.
No.
Knight.
Aye.
Young.
No.
No. Carried. Section 9.
Section 9 is a 3.5-page section. It contains all the statutory material on the handgun registration. Someone said the application form, what it required to contain. The section requires that
going through
initially when
what I told you this morning.
Firearm owners apply for a firearm permit. They have to simultaneously apply for handgun registration certificate for any handgun sale.
Approval Section 9.
You heard the motion. Any discussion?
Even report. Question.
Call the roll.
Fishburne.
Aye.
Senderburn.
Aye.
Chandler.
Aye.
Clark.
Aye.
Jernstead.
Nope.
Johnson.
No.
Knight.
No.
Aye.
Young.
Nope.
Mr. Chairman.
No.
Mr. Chairman, is this going to be known as the Uturi Code?
And Clark. Section 10.
We've had some others on our side once in a while.
And there was any coerced fume loads.
Section 10 sets out the reporting requirements. The event a handgun, a permit, or a registration certificate is lost or found.
Move we approve Section 10, Mr. Chairman.
You've heard the motion. Any discussion? Call the roll.
Fishburne.
Aye.
Senderburn.
Aye.
Chandler.
Aye.
Clark.
Aye.
Jernstead.
No.
Johnson.
No.
Knight.
Aye.
Young.
No.
Mr. Chairman.
No.
Yeah, put it, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
Just not for my own information. Not yet. If I owned seven guns, one pistol, and then I bought three more pistols, how many pieces of paper am I going to end up with in that collection?
21.
About as many as you have when you file your income tax return.
You would have one firearm permit, and you would have four registration certificates for each, representing each hand.
Mr. Chairman,
you
bought three more if you bought three more.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, I think that in the interest of time, I'm going to move that we approve sections 11 through 30.
Well, Mr. Chairman, let me point out that 11 through 30, or most of 11 through 30, are simply a restatement of existing law and do not contain controversial sections,
right,
except that it should be clear that we have made a significant change in that permits to carry concealable firearms, which previously were issued by county sheriffs and city police chiefs, will now be centralized in the state police department. And that basically, as far as reporting sales, which presently has to be done, and the unlawful possession of firearms sections, we have updated the wording so as to make the language consistent with the rest of the code, and but we have made that change with respect to permits to carry concealable weapons.
Well, now, do I understand, and you're assuring us that in sections 11 through 30, then that there is no substantial change from the existing law?
Excepting?
With the exception that I mentioned as to who grants the permit for
yes
carry concealed weapons. And also,
you got a couple of, well, we have about three new crimes in there, too. Furnishing explosives to a minor, defacing a firearm, illegal traffic, and destructive devices.
And these sections also contain the procedural and the defenses with respect to prosecution of offenses under the gun control section itself.
Well, that's enough of a change.
Yes. I'm ready to vote, Mr. Chairman. By way of explanation, in advance of the vote, let me say I voted on a lot of the things that we've already passed, notwithstanding some reservations that I had about some of the drafting and technical things in particular bill, but I just didn't think that it was in order to take up a lot of time nitpicking on a lot of these things. I do have one question, however, before we vote on the bundle, and that is, in section 23, why do we limit defacing to only a handgun or machine gun? What I think you're getting at is they're taking away the serial number. And if that's the case, why isn't it equally a wrong to take the serial number off a rifle or a shotgun?
Because you have no central registry. Of course, well, the real value in it is being able to trace it back to an owner.
Under this article, rifles will not be registered. In other words, even if this were fully implemented, we would have no idea how many rifles there were in the state of Oregon.
Who owned them or who bought them? Or?
Oh, I have one other question. Just one other, Mr. Chairman. And that is, do we retain the crime of exponent possession that
we do?
Yeah.
No. Everybody.
And if this is defeated, of course, we'll have the law that's in existence now.
Big pardon?
We'll a no vote on this if we retain the existing law, which this is simply a restatement.
Yes, I think that's good.
Yes, Turnstead.
It's my understanding that these will only be issued to the state police officer.
This is on the permit to carry a concealed weapon concealed. Presently, you get that permit from the chief of police or the county sheriff. This draft would transfer that to the state police.
And then it would be up to them to decide which of their offices could issue those.
And they would do it administratively, presumably throughout the state.
Fire.
In other words, it would simply transfer that function from the local officials to the state officials.
What section?
How many state offices?
All of that is divided into regions. I think if there is a state police office of some, I'm sure that there is a state police office of some sort in every county. There are some, in addition, some counties have more than one. Klamath County, for example, has a small office of Gilchrist, as well as the office of Klamath Falls. But there is an office of the state police in every county.
We have them. I see that now.
There's an officer who operates out of Fossil.
Right. They have one officer in Fossil.
He maintains hours and he reads on the phone.
Now, section 30 is the appropriation section. Do you want to consider that separately?
Well, no, I didn't. Because it's
certain figures of $5 million.
Oh, no, no, don't be silly.
He isn't being too silly.
Yes, I think he is.
Who's going to make the determination?
Well, the same people that are going to make the determination on the sums that we left blank in the other sections.
Tell us who are they.
Well, I suppose it'd be the Ways and Means Committee. That ought to solve.
If it gets out of judiciary, if it gets out of judiciary, it'll have to go to the Ways and Means by prior reference. Mm-hmm. Just no question about it. And I think Senator Houston. Take care of one place.
Really, it's an exercise. That's perhaps why I'm moving that we amend with the approval of sections 11 through 30. I'm trying to be practical. But it appears that if we go through the thing at the rate we've been going, then we're going to carry them five to four and maybe amend a word.
Of course, I can well see that this, other than one or two of these sections, all of the remaining sections are, I think, are properly called non-controversial. They don't have a thing to do with gun control. A couple of them do. A couple of them do where they talk about defense, but basically they don't. But I have no objection to voting.
Are you ready for the question?
Now, before you vote, Mr. Chairman, you want to review the grading of these crimes that we put in there?
How do you vote? I can certainly vote for section 16, I guess. I'm not quite sure how I vote for section 14.
Well, Mr. Chairman, maybe I should withdraw my motion and instead move that we approve Article 28 as amended.
Well, we do have to make a determination as to the degree of the, and these would be crimes, presumably, whether you have gun control or not.
Right.
Possession of deadly weapons and so on.
Yeah, but section 14,
maybe you could withdraw your motion for Minipod and maybe go through 14 through.
You have a slight problem.
And with some of these sections, which sure all of us can support, that really shouldn't maybe be part of our code.
I'll move we approve sections 11, 12, 13.
We decided in your absence that these were not going to be part of our code.
Well, but I'm talking about some of these sections, maybe can be.
The entire article under the vote this morning will be submitted to the legislature separately. If the legislature, as is widely predicted, doesn't want a thing to do with gun control, they can start at section 11. They will have language dealing with non-controversial firearm statutes, which is consistent with our language of the code, and then simply start at section 11 and work through it.
Amend by deleting the first 10 sections
right,
in this article.
They renumber the sections.
Renumber the sections.
28 and away they go. It's no problem at all.
Section 11?
Mr. Chairman, don't you think what would be likely to happen in that event is that the legislature then would, or the, one of the committees working on our major bill, our proposed code, would amend that bill to pick up these firearms.
Yeah, that's right.
Sure.
Question.
Motion is on 11, 12, and 13. Tom Young.
May I ask a question for the board? How is a concealed weapon defined in the definition? Is there a definition for concealed? Or a weapon that's capable of being concealed?
No, we don't use that definition. Because we define what a hand is.
Well,